The Singapore Grip by J.G. Farrell. Adapted by Mike Walker. Episode 1.
Singapore. An island not much larger than the Isle of Wight, and yet after Japan, the richest nation in Asia. Here you can be arrested for dropping a sweet paper, become a multimillionaire overnight, or bankrupt a venerable merchant bank before morning. You can breathe the scent of a thousand different blooms or see 100 different races hurrying past you on the streets. It is a state that was brought into being by the decision of one man looking at a map who said, "Here, midway between China and India, we shall create a great port. Our object is not territory, but trade. A mighty commercial emporium whence we may extend our influence politically as circumstances require." That was in the year 1819. By the year 1942, a little over 50 years ago, Singapore is still a mighty emporium. But things are about to change. We are here, at a moment when this little bit of empire is about to make a jolting passage over the switch points of history. We shall see tragedy. Yes, many individual human tragedies. But we shall also hear the sour, impersonal laughter of whatever forces direct our destiny on this earth. In Europe, they are fighting for their lives. In Singapore, we are celebrating the 50th Jubilee of Blackett & Webb, the state's oldest, most venerable and richest merchant house. Mr. Walter Blackett.
Continuity in prosperity under British rule. The improvement of rice-growing subsistence farming into glorious rubber estates, a factory without chimneys. To most of the civilized world, Blackett and Webb is rubber. And since most of the civilized world runs, or at least gets about, on rubber.
Mr. Harold Webb, called Old Mr. Webb.
The British Empire...
The late and sorely lamented Mr. Webb.
Mr. Webb! Mr. Webb, over here!
What?
Major Archer. Brendan Archer. Friend of your late father. Terribly sorry for that. Death. Walter Blackett, you remember Mr. Blackett, surviving partner? Walter asked me to...
We met a couple of times, I think. When I visited father, I wasn't brought up in Singapore.
Let me carry your case. How was the trip?
Pretty ghastly. Flying in wartime. Though, I must say, Singapore doesn't seem... Well, it's very different.
We do appear to have escaped the ravages, eh? Well, so far, so far. Mr. Blackett asked me to see you settled. Your father's house? If you'd rather take a room at the Raffles...
No, I... Father's house will be...
I say, Matthew. Hello there, old man.
Monty Blackett. Did you ever meet him?
No, I met the sister, Kate. Charming girl, in England. She was at boarding school.
That's the younger sister. This one is Joan. Something of a heartbreaker, Mr. Webb.
Oh, please call me Matthew.
Hello, Major.
Hello, Monty. Good afternoon, Joan. I expect you're looking at my moustache.
It is a bit lopsided.
That blighted Chong calls himself a barber, but...
couldn't you trim the other side so that...
It mustn't look like Hitler, you know.
You are Matthew Webb, aren't you? Well, of course you are. Monty Blackett, don't think we ever met, but we'll get to know each other in a jiffy. All right, Major, dismissed. We'll look after Matthew now.
I'll see you later then, Mr. Webb. And once again, my condolences.
Tuck the bags in the boot, old man. I say, Matthew, you look wrung out. Dare say you could use a drink, maybe some oysters, eh? You fly them in from Australia somewhere.
I am hot. I don't know how you stand it.
Hot! This ain't hot. Aces, you tell him, wait and see how hot it can get, eh?
Can we just scram before I die of heat?
Hello, we haven't met, I think.
The human being.
I beg your...
Jump in, old man. We'd better get a move on.
Oh, just shut up and drive, Monty, will you?
Look, sis, the point is... What is the point?
Oh, Major, thank you. Goodbye.
Well, there you are. Monty, the heir to the great house of Blackett and Webb, deceased. A little over-inclined to the lighter side of life, Monty is a disappointment to his father.
Monty, do you ever actually think about anything at all other than cocktails and girls?
Of course I do, Father. I think a great deal about quite a lot of things. Quite a lot of the time.
Well, I suppose you might learn by your mistakes.
Joan Blackett, on the other hand, though causing her mother a great deal of heartache with her wildly unsuitable romantic life.
So what if he's a Brazilian? He's a very nice Brazilian, and he dances brilliantly.
Is, in her father's eye, his true heir. The real stuff of the Blacketts. Shrewd, with an eye to continuity and prosperity. What a pity she's a girl, then, and will never take over the great house.
Fact is, my dear, with old Webb dead, the business is at a crossroads.
Well, I should say so, Father.
And young Matthew was Webb's heir, and therefore the co-owner of the company. And from all I've heard, he's a bit of a head-in-the-air do-gooder. League of Nations, all that liberal stuff.
When Kate met him back home, she said he was on the workman's side in the general strike.
They are.
Kate thought he was rather dashing.
Kate is 12 years old. We are not, eh?
No, Father, we are not. Though Jim Arendorf, who knew him at university, does call him a wonderful human being. Or, as he says it, human being.
And Jim Arendorf is American. We are not, eh?
No, Father, we are not.
So, in the interests of the business, if Master Matthew Webb acts like every other young dog on this island and falls in love with you, well, be a dear, don't discourage him, eh? Only need a couple of years to lick him into shape, what?
Father, how old-fashioned you are. I took it for granted long ago that you'd want me to marry Matthew for the sake of the house.
Oh, I see. Now you have surprised me.
And of course I will. After all, why not? For the sake of Blackett and Webb.
As I was saying, sister...
Monty, do you look out!
I know that chap.
Oh, God, Arendorf.
Yes, Jim Arendorf. You know him.
I should say Joan knows him, don't you, sis?
Do shut it, Monty.
Matthew!
We were at Oxford together. Jim!
Well, maybe we better not tell the human being about you tipping a drink all over his Yankee friend.
Do you know anything at all, Monty?
I know Arendorf is in love with my little sis, eh?
Let's go. Matthew! Matthew!
I thought I wouldn't make it in time.
Well, I'd heard you were here, Jim, but how did you know I was coming?
Oh, Monty. Mr. Blackett. Yeah.
Hiya, Monty. Hiya, Joan.
You're looking really pretty. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day?
I'd far rather you didn't, if you don't mind. It's so hot. Now, can we please scram?
Same old Jim. Next you'll be saying she's more lovely and more temperate. Yes, well.
Look, why don't I ride with you guys? I don't have my car, so I can...
I'm not sure. That's...
Good idea. And the breeze will cool us all down. Come on, Jim. I'll ride up with Monty and you can...
Are you going to desert me, Matthew, so soon?
No. It's okay. I'll ride up front. Really,
and you can stay beside me, Matthew.
Well,
I'll even let you hold my racket if you like.
Come on, then!
One of the sights of Singapore, old man. Sort of a fun fair. The happy world.
There's a better place on Kim Seng Road on the other side of town, Matthew. You can dance with lovely taxi girls at 25 cents a throw.
Oh, my God. We nearly ran them down.
Ran who down? We didn't run anybody down. Maybe a few commies, eh?
You have communists here.
Where you have chinkies, you have communists, old boy. They tried to call a strike at the Firestone plant last year. Stupid bureaucrats from London almost let them get away with it.
Did they have a real grievance?
They were commies, Matthew. Don't tell me you agree with all that stuff.
Well, I am actually rather interested in colonial politics, the native worker, the European...
The point is, Matthew, rubber is vital for the war effort. We produce the rubber.
I'm sorry, I don't quite...
Oh, sorry, Matthew. The seat's so slippery.
So sorry.
Here we are, all of a bundle. Do try to drive safely, Monty.
Better watch out, old chap. Sis is a tiger when she gets close. Hey, Mr. Arendorf.
I wouldn't.
The point is, Matthew, we know what we are doing. And we don't need all this bloody silly interference from Whitehall. Let us get on with it.
But isn't Pope...
Watch out with that tennis racket, Sid.
But isn't there any concern out here about the Japanese?
The Japs?
There's talks going on in Washington right now. Don't you remember me telling you, Joel?
I can't say I do, Mr. Arendorf.
America wants Japan out of Indochina. Japan wants the U.S. to stop helping Indochina. I guess it could be bad news if they don't agree.
And wouldn't Singapore be rather vulnerable if the Japanese were drawn into some kind of...
I suppose some people might have the wind up, but I don't see it myself. Let the little yellow buggers fight each other, I say. Now this is somewhere of interest.
Oh, look here, Monty. This is a bit thick. You did it on purpose.
I'm sorry. That girl, she's... Oh, my lord.
Appears to have forgotten her smalls, eh? Not the kind of thing you see in the League of Nations, eh?
What's she want? Careful, Monty, for God's sake!
There you are, then. Mekem, catch! Mekem means grub.
Why did you do that, Monty? You threw her off the car.
I expect you're hungry too, eh? Well, we better get you home. We put you up in your father's bungalow. Called it the Mayfair for some reason. Quite a place, really. Little palace, eh?
I'm sure that'll be all right.
That fellow Archer lodges there. Bit of a charity case, if you ask me. One of your father's odd little charities.
One of them?
Oh, I expect you'll find out about the rest soon enough.
Rippling muscles, gleaming torsos, gym, that sort of thing.
I'm sorry, Monty, but I don't...
It's nothing, man.
And you'll be expected at our place for dinner tonight, if that suits. Can we drop you here, Mr. Arendorf?
If you could...
Goodbye, Mr. Arendorf. See you again, perhaps.
Yeah, sure.
We'll meet again soon, Matthew.
I hope so. We've a lot to talk about. Bye!
So, you and Mr. Arendorf are old friends?
Yes. I must say, he seemed very quiet, not at all his normal self.
Ah, well, perhaps he'd had a disappointment. Hey, Joe?
I am so hungry I could eat a horse. Actually, I'm trying to lose some weight. What do you think, Matthew? Should I? I'd hate to think my frock was too tight.
No. I think you're actually...
And Matthew, looking at Joan Blackett, realizes that her frock is perfect, that her body, pressed against, contained just within the thin cotton dress, is perfect, that her face is perfect, that all in all, she is a very attractive young woman. But he says nothing. And a silence falls as Monty drives until Matthew asks,
"Does anyone know what the Singapore grip is? The RAF bloke in the plane kept telling me to watch out for it, but he wouldn't tell me what it actually was."
The silence continues. There is, after all, no answer to such naivety. A silence that contains the young people like a bubble. A bubble that surrounds old Mr. Webb's bungalow, the extensive warehouses of Blackett and Webb, the Raffles Hotel, the various clubs and societies, the restaurants and bars, all the panoply of empire. And somewhere in Japan, young soldiers stand stiffly to attention before the flag, seeing in their mind's eye glory or death for the emperor, or glory and death for the emperor. And after the parades, they snip off strands of hair and fingernails and send them home, just in case they should die abroad, so their families have at least something to bury. And somewhere in a Singapore garden, a young woman called Vera Chang slips off her clothes and turns naked cartwheels to an audience of apes.
"Dear boy, gives me great pleasure to welcome you at last to this house, and I should say to these straight settlements, which your father did so much to build up in his lifetime."
"Well, thank you for making it possible for me to fly out here, sir. I know that
places..."
"Well,
we still have a little influence, eh? After all, when you can invite the Commander-in-Chief Singapore to dinner, you ought to be able to get a seat on a plane, what?"
"Brooke Popham."
"The very man. Ah, Julia, my dear. This is Matthew Webb. Matthew, my wife."
"Oh, hello."
As Matthew shakes her hand, he sees that Mrs. Blackett was once a beauty too. And he thinks...
"So, this is the face Jones will become. How strange all this is. England a few hours ago, and now..."
"A drink. Someone give me a drink. Hello, Matthew. Bit early, aren't you?"
"Am I? Good Lord, she's wearing silk stockings. No one at home has seen silk stockings for...
I say, old man, do stop drooling over Sissy's legs. She might get the wrong idea.
I don't know, you two. Hope you don't mind them, Matthew.
But the look that passes between Joan and her father is one of complicity. Things are going well.
No. Air Marshal Brooke Popham, you said, Mr. Blackett.
Walter, please. Spent the day with him and his bureaucratic johnnies. Rice, you see.
Rice, really, Father?
Damn natives simply won't grow the stuff.
But surely rice is the staple crop.
Rather grow rubber, you see.
I suppose they think it's more profitable.
Oh, I suppose they do.
And they're right, aren't they?
I wouldn't say that, exactly. There have been great variations in demand, and after all, in bad times, they can't eat the rubber, can they, what? And besides, rice involves too much hard work, so there it is. We end up having to import rice to feed the estate workers.
Why don't your estate, our estate, grow rice? I mean, it seems unfair to expect the peasants to grow a less profitable crop simply to allow you to go on making more money.
Well, I... I expect that's Brooke Popham and Major Archer.
If you ask me, the old boy wouldn't get a decent meal if we didn't invite him now and then.
The Commander-in-Chief.
Marshal, good evening.
Good evening, all. Not late, am I?
No, Archer. The ex-major. A bit down on his uppers, you know.
Oh, Monty, don't listen, Matthew. The major is a sweetie.
Evening, Blackett.
Father thinks he had some kind of shock once and he's never really got over it, you know. Hello, Major. Come and talk to us.
Of course, my dear. Good evening, Monty. Matthew?
General, my wife Julia, my daughter Joan, and my son, Monty.
Ah, Monty Blackett. Heard you were a bit of a scamp, young man. Not put to name down, eh?
What's he on about?
War service.
Don't you worry, sir. The Major here has drafted me into his volunteer fire service, right?
Well, I didn't exactly. You didn't quite... But jolly good, yes. All hands gratefully received. What about you, Matthew?
And so they drift through. Matthew managing to tread on Mrs. Blackett's foot, whilst reminding himself firmly not to let his socialist enthusiasms carry him away in this company. Joan managing to ensure she sits opposite Matthew, where the light will catch her best. Monty managing to stay well away from Brooke Popham and his staff officer. Mrs. Blackett keeping a wary eye on the boys as they serve bowls of soused fish. Major Archer helping himself enthusiastically, whilst vowing that one day he will invite the Blacketts back, since this is the 79th dinner he has attended at the mansion without responding.
Oh, no.
And Walter Blackett.
What was it exactly that you were...
doing?
Your father didn't exactly make it clear.
I was working for a department of the League of Nations.
And what department was that exactly?
The Committee for International Understanding.
Well, it doesn't seem to have done very well, old chap, considering the World War and all.
Monty's being facetious, but he's not far wrong. I'd be surprised if any of those charitable organisations ever did a damn thing that was any practical use to anyone.
I suppose, sir, that I couldn't really disagree with you or Monty.
That must be a first, someone agreeing with Monty.
No!
Sometimes when I was sitting there in Geneva, what a dreary place it is.
Geneva? Someone mentioned Geneva? Met a young chap the other day, said he spent some time there, you know. Said it was a deuced awful hole. What was his name? Memory not what it used to be. Herringport. American chap. Erinmore. Said he knew you, Walter, and your charming daughter here. I say, my dear, are those silk...
Everyone waits. The silence goes on until they realize that the Commander-in-Chief is... sleeping. And in his dreams...
What fun it was, eh? Back then. You remember? Driving to Senlis in autumn 1915... Yes, we were late. It was almost dark by the time he reached the place. And that great yellow harvest moon was hanging over the misty fields and poplars. Like a corot, he said, I remember. Yes. I remember now, Erendorf. That's it. A fine chap.
But, of course, it's easy to blame the League of Nations.
I'm not sure I'm quite with you, Matthew.
Well, can't you see? The so-called great powers have brought all this destruction down on themselves.
How exactly?
Because their foreign ministries are full of upper-class dimwits who have more in common with each other than with their own people. They prefer to make cynical treaties rather than make real efforts towards peace. All fools, absolute idiots.
I say, it's getting them, Buff.
Is it getting hot in here?
Or was it herringbone?
Besides, Matthew, strong nations will always take advantage of the weak if they can do so with impunity.
Well, exactly. Because the League was given no support. They ignored the injustice done to China when Japan just walked into Manchuria and took it. Damn it, we virtually supported Japanese aggression.
Would it have made any difference if we'd condemned them?
It would at first if we...
Major Archer, you saw a bit of the world when you were in the army. What do you think, eh?
I think life would be better if nations and people were guided by principle.
Exactly. It would make so much difference.
But they are not. It is, I'm afraid, self-interest that guides us.
I don't believe that.
Your father and I used to discuss these things, Matthew. I think we both agreed. Misplaced idealism has sapped the nation's strength badly these last 20 years. It's encouraged our enemies to try their luck.
Boringduff! Goering Hoff!
Yeah, now, what do you think, Air Marshal? Are the peacemakers blessed?
Not unless they have the buffalo.
The buffalo, Sir Robert?
Sorry, my dear. Forgot there were ladies present. Brewster Buffalo. Best plane in the East. Japs don't have a fighter to match it. If they did, well, they'd soon be trying something, you mark my words. Not, of course, that we can afford to be overconfident.
Not that I don't understand, as a businessman, why the Japanese had to invade China in 37. They needed to secure their business influence.
Business security hardly gives anyone the right to invade another country, for God's sake.
Couldn't agree more, but you see, Matthew, there comes a point, and I'm afraid there always does come a point, when the justice of the matter becomes irrelevant. Strong nations survive, weak nations go to the wall.
Well, I am boiling, and I would like to go into the garden now it's cooler. What do you say, Matthew? Would you be kind enough to escort me?
Matthew, trying to calm himself after his outburst, becomes suddenly aware that Joan is staring at him across the table, and he can't help thinking once more how beautiful she is, how the lamplight makes her hair glow and models the delicate corners of her cheekbones. And he finds himself somehow in the garden. And in the garden, he finds something slipping into his hand and thinks for a moment in panic.
Oh, my God, flying snake.
But it's only Joan's soft fingers, which begin to squirm and squeeze and burrow into his palm. And he thinks,
if only Monty weren't here.
And, to cover his sudden embarrassment, asks,
is it true that fruit bats are dangerous? Or was I thinking of flying snakes?
What on earth are you talking about, Matthew? Siggy?
Fruit bats do fly, and they can look quite frightening, like Count Dracula with his bat wings. But actually, they're quite harmless.
Not like the old flying snake, eh?
Oh, I do beg your pardon. It's been a terribly long day. Though I must say thanks, Monty, for your help in getting me a seat on the plane. Otherwise...
Oh, don't worry, old man. After all, we couldn't leave you back in Blighty to be raped by all those strapping land girls, could we?
Hey, are you young people out there? The air marshal is going.
Party's over.
Matthew, thank you for coming tonight. I know you'd rather have rested.
No.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Now, sleep well, eh?
We can walk back together, Matthew, if you don't object.
Of course not, Major. Good night, Mr. Blackett. Mrs. Blackett.
Good night.
So, nice of you to invite me.
Oh, no, pleasure's all mine, young man. Or maybe I should say, mine and Joan's. You seem to have made quite a hit with my daughter, Matthew, huh?
Yes, sir,
Should be going. Night, Blackett. Night, all.
Night, Major. Oh, I'd like a word or two sometime about the Jubilee Parade.
Of course, of course.
Major, retired, Brendan Archer. What kind of fellow gets washed up here in Singapore? A discreet, sensible fellow. Although, as Walter Blackett put it,
lacking in ambition. Sort of chap with time on his hands and could be relied upon to volunteer for charity balls, picnics in aid of the orphans, buy a bomber for Britain funds.
He is, closer friends observe, the perennial bachelor. Since the Major only ever fell in love with the wives of his friends, and, being an honourable man, would never breathe a word of his feelings.
Well, you got to meet the bigwigs tonight, eh? The tactical brains who will defend us all against the Japanese.
Do you think the Japanese will come, Major?
I think Walter is right. They have no choice, as they see it. Survival.
And Singapore? Will we survive here?
Brooke Popham appears confident. He may know things that we do not.
His closer friends sometimes used to think that once upon a time something must have happened to the Major that had shaken him to the core, and that he had never quite managed to get steady again.
But of course it may be that Brooke Popham and the rest of them are simply fools. here we are. May I offer you a whiskey and soda before bed?
Nothing for me, Major. I'm exhausted.
This way. It's easy to miss your footing in the dark.
What's that?
The bamboo. Odd noise, eh? Visitors often think
no,
it's...
No, not that. That. Is there someone else staying in my father's house?
Well, I must leave you now. Good night, Matthew. The boy will see to your needs.
But how strange it all is here. Yesterday I was in England, and now I'm listening to music in the jungle. And was I a shade too enthusiastic tonight? Did I embarrass them with all that League of Nations stuff? And what about Joan Blackett? She certainly is a smasher. And her hand, wriggling in mine. What does it all mean? Singapore.
So, there you are, my boy. Over this great area of the globe, covered in steaming swamp and mountains and horrid, horrid jungle, a few determined pioneers, armed only with a great creative vision and a little capital...
It is a few days later, and we are at the Blackett's. Matthew is waiting for Monty and... Joan? Walter is... Walter.
This little band set the mark of civilization, bringing prosperity to themselves, so let's not forget the crocodiles of bankruptcy, quietly slipping into the water at their passage. But also, and above all, a means of livelihood to the unhappy millions of Asiatics who had been faced by misery and destitution until their coming. Such a man was your father, Matthew.
Over the week or so since his arrival, Walter has come to think of Matthew as by no means hopeless. Indeed, with Joan's guiding hand, the lad might even show promise.
Oh, not still waffling on about the crocodiles of intemperance, Father.
At least more promise than Monty.
Mr. Blackett was just asking me about the Jubilee celebrations.
Want to rope you in, does he?
Seems to me a good chance for Matthew to learn something of our heritage here.
Continuity in prosperity. Well, we're going out, actually, as soon as Joan is ready.
Monty promised to show me the Great World Amusement Park.
You're the limit sometimes, Monty.
Nonsense! They're going to shoot a woman out of a cannon. See? Miss Olive Kennedy Walsh, B.A. Pass Arts, H.Dip Ed, will hurtle through air towards advancing disagreeable aggressor.
I think she's supposed to, actually crash through some kind of Japanese tank.
Crash through?
Paper tank? You know, one of those things that chinkies make for funerals. Mercedes and Rolls Royces, Matthew, all made out of paper. They think it'll get them more respect in the next world if they arrive in a paper Rolls.
Well, it's hardly educational. Still, if you want to go, my dear... I'm sure your cavalier here will escort you, eh, Matthew?
Yes, it sounds fascinating.
Right.
Actually. I bumped into Jim Arendorf the other day, told him we were going. He said he'd meet us there, if that's all right.
What did you do that for?
Well, he's a friend, and to tell the truth, since I got here, he hasn't seemed his old self. I thought it might cheer him up, if you see what I mean.
Well, we can't hang around all evening. Bye, Father. Don't meet up.
I won't, if you promise to be sensible, Monty.
A fat chance of that. Come on, you two.
Good Lord. Is all this for the human cannonball?
No, no. Everything goes on here. You'll see. People are crazy about dance. They bought the dance floor out of the old Hotel de l'Europe, which used to be the swankiest hotel on the Padang. They sometimes get bands off the P&O ships. Makes a change from the Chinks and Filipinos.
Don't get lost, Matthew.
Hey, over here. Wait, Matthew.
Wait, Monty, wait.
Matthew, hi. Hi, Joan.
Quick, let's get inside before we get crushed to death.
Kiss a snipe, I'll let her.
Soldier snipe, pigs.
I have to find someone to watch my car. The local gas house gang will have it stripped in no time.
Come on! Should we wait for Jim?
Why on earth?
I'll see you in a minute.
As Matthew looks back at Jim Erendorf's face becoming lost in the crowd, he is harrowed to see the expression of suffering on it.
Please swallow a sunlight pill for a male person, moonlight pill for a female person.
Chinese opera. Tosh, utter tosh. Come on, old chap.
Matthew watches a moment, entranced. Then moves on, past a man selling bunches of dried frogs tied together by their legs. Past sellers of sotong soup and wonton mee. And hundreds of stray morsels on bamboo spills. And a family of performing pygmies. And as he walks deeper and deeper into the crowds of men and women of every shape, size and colour, he thinks,
it's as if the sudden appearance of all this Western money has created some kind of vacuum which has sucked in all these people from everywhere around and even further, the whole of the East, working for who? Is it a sweatshop, as the communists say, exploiting all of these... Or is Western capital bringing hope to all these millions of people? Is it one, the other, both? Well, whatever. I'm part of it now. Blackett and Webb. And I'm Webb.
But as Matthew considers these weighty problems, his eye is drawn to a number of very pretty Chinese or Eurasian girls, strolling arm in arm, most of them wearing their high-collared, straight-cut Shanghai gowns. They wear their hair cut short in the Western fashion. But then he sees a girl in a Western frock.
Oh.
With her hair long and loose.
Good Lord.
And though she is Chinese, this hair glows red. Dark red round the edges. But oddest of all, she seems to know Matthew, since she pushes through the crowds.
Matthew, I know your father. He was very kind to me. I was very sorry when he died. My name is Vera Chang. I saw you when you came to the bungalow with Mr. and Miss Blackett, who has also been kind to me. She is beautiful, don't you think? Like Joan Crawford, she reminds me of. So lovely.
Good gracious, I
was in trouble, in Shanghai. The Japanese, they thought I was a... Well... And your dear father, like a saint in heaven, gave me a bunk up. Please excuse my slang expression of speaking. And now he has died, and it really does give me the blues. But for you, it must be very much worse.
Well, actually, Miss Chang, my father and I weren't exactly...
Yes, I know how you are feeling. Your father showed me a snap of you when small baby, and I wonder, in what country of the world will he be when he hears the news? Because I know your dear mother kicked the bucket and you will be left all alone.
And Miss Chang takes Matthew's hand in hers and, in an impulse of compassion, inserts it under her dress, clasping it so that Matthew's rather damp palm appears to be holding...
A breast? Yes, absolutely. Silky, soft, agreeably resistant and satisfying to the touch.
And Matthew, standing one moment with his hand on the breast of this strange girl, is swept away in the crowd and loses all sight of Miss Vera Chen. Or maybe she'd never been there at all.
There you are! We thought we'd lost you.
Something really odd just happened, Monty.
Now, come on, the show's starting.
Forever, King George, world friend to all peace-loving people. Please do notice, Miss Kennedy Walsh will enter Cannonmouth and hurtle towards disagreeable aggressor.
What on earth is a disagreeable aggressor?
Oh, there you are. The paper tank with that nasty Nip Hirohito peeping out of the turret.
You know, I rather suspect that if he does come, it won't be in a paper tank.
Oh, never mind that, old man. Take a gander at Miss Kennedy Walsh. What a pair, eh? Won't get them down the barrel without a good shove.
For God's sake, Monty.
Is she really going to climb down the barrel?
Ah, big blast, number one.
Ah, there you are. I was looking everywhere. Say, however is she going to fit down the...
Glory be to God. Will you give us a shove, you lazy gombeans?
Let me!
Joan, may I sit...
You sit next to Monty. I want to be with Matthew.
Will we be staying here all the night or what? Shoot the bloody thing, will you?
Fortress Singapore will never surrender to foreign aggressor of Japanese race. Many people together repel nasty aggressor. Fire!
Huh. We seem to have got stuck in every sense.
Fire!
Looks like the Jap tank is going to get away.
Fire!
No, she's going to hit.
She's going to miss.
Can we talk about something else?
Wow, she missed.
She didn't miss the wall.
Will one of you gombeans give us a hand up then?
Jolly good try, old girl. Now a correction to be made in support of the Nanyang Anti-Enemy Backing Up Society. And cheers for mighty heroine.
Let's get a drink, shall we?
Jim, can I have a word?
What about?
Well, I was wondering, I mean, could the coming of Western capital in the Far East be regarded as a benefit?
To?
The natives.
Well, doesn't it all depend on what you mean by,
natives? Progress.
Well, both, I guess. I mean, there was massive immigration of Indians, and their situation wasn't like the Burmese. Burma was a prosperous and fertile country before the British took it over. On the other hand, a barter economy, which they had, doesn't have the resilience of a cash economy when it comes to surviving, well, natural disasters.
Oh, come on. The rice merchants knocked Burma for six. They destroyed a whole culture. Villagers became migrants, seasonal workers.
Sure, I believe you, but that is still a partial view. You have to look at the whole picture.
What? Like that Indian bloke over there in the blazer and striped tie, modelled on some fatuous English tradition that has no meaning for him at all?
Jim Erendorf looks not at any Indian, but at Joan Blackett's bottom as she walks some distance ahead with her brother. The light blue summer dress picks up the glow of lanterns, lit now dusk approaches, so that to Erendorf, it seems as if her figure flares and dies hypnotically.
Her bottom is just too perfect. It's too beautiful to get a purchase on. Like everything about her. It just slips out of your hand.
Let me give you an example, Jim. There's this ghastly Darwinian principle of economics called the law of substitution, more or less, the cheapest will survive. In Burma, they used to build beautiful, elaborately carved cargo boats, and these have been utterly replaced by barges. The people used to cook with sesame oil. Now they use cheaper groundnut oil.
If it's cheaper, they have more money to spend on other things.
Not so. If they can live cheaply, it stands to reason they can be paid less, as long as there's no shortage of labor. The extra wealth doesn't go to the natives, it goes to the Western businesses, like Blackett and Webb. The natives are always worse off. Their culture gone, their food worse, their communities broken up.
But Marx believed, did he not, that such a stage is necessary if society is to proceed from feudalism to communism. Didn't he even see the British in India as a kind of a progress?
Well, maybe yes, if communism is what you want. But what if there is no revolution? Where are the natives then?
Well, I have a law of my own. Erendorf's law. The survival of the easiest. Yeah. 20 years from now, coffee beans will have disappeared. We'll be drinking nothing but camp coffee. Not because it's better, but because it's easier. No one will play the piano because it's easier to listen to the radio.
Will you stop that?
Huh? Stop what?
looking at me in that stupid way.
I wasn't looking at you at all, Joan. I was reading the goddamn dance hall sign. Look, Joan, this is ridiculous.
You said it.
Really, you can't expect me to put up with this.
Clear off, then. No one invited you anyway.
As it happens, Matthew did.
Frankly, I don't think it matters a bugger if the natives work as coolies or anything else, as long as they have jobs. They don't have them in India or South China, and they do in Singapore.
I thought you said you were going.
That's what you'd like, isn't it?
Monty, we must have a sense of responsibility.
Job or no job, that's what it comes down to.
Let's go and dance, shall we?
Oh, no, you two go ahead. I just want a word with Matthew.
Don't you think, given the huge returns on money invested in Malaya...
Well, look, I do want to talk to you about investment, but not in Malaya.
Eh?
We've this chinky girl called Sally, has her own flat, clean. Doesn't get drunk.
Oh, really?
No, 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 she's got imagination. You can do anything you like.
Oh.
Who needs a bleeding yank anyway?
Here, you a yank?
Sure, buddy.
So why don't you join in the bloody war, then?
Don't want to make it too easy for you guys.
Just think it over. No need to make a snap decision.
No, really.
Come on, Matthew, I want to dance.
Only $15 a month. And I can tell you, she goes at it with a hammer and tongs.
It's not the price, Monty. It's the idea of it.
Huh?
Matthew!
Oh, and if you think you'll be getting it from Joan, I'm afraid you're barking up the wrong tree. I know lots of blokes who've been out with her, and she doesn't.
Doesn't what?
She doesn't. Not even occasionally.
You dance very well, Matthew.
No, I don't think
that... You move well. You know how to hold your partner.
But aren't you going to dance with Jim?
Why would I dance with him? Come on, Matthew. Sweep me off my feet.
I don't feel terribly...
Are you all right, old man?
A bit lightheaded, that's all.
See what you're doing to the poor chap, Jen?
Matthew, maybe you should go home. Rest. Travelling can be upsetting.
Oh, I'm tired of this. I want to go home.
It's not 10 yet. You can't.
I can, if I want to. Matthew, will you?
I'll give you a lift.
I'd rather Matthew.
No, that's all right. I'm feeling a bit, I don't want to...
I have to talk to you, John.
Exactly.
Well, go on then. Off you go. Matthew and I'll find something to keep us busy, right, old chap?
Oh, yes, I suppose.
We'll take a taxi. Bye, you two.
Monty...
Where are we going?
Oh, just to see some things. Stop here.
What things?
You sure you're all right? You sound odd to me.
The car stops. And in a moment, to Matthew's surprise, the windows fill with women's faces emerging from the dark, piled high.
Like coconuts. Are they real? Are they real?
Hags. Drive on.
In the angled light, thin arms stretch out, some moving blindly through the open windows, trailing about in the interior like seaweed, plucking feebly at Matthew, flowing in a tide of events, flowing, receding.
Drive on, you little yellow bugger.
Who are they?
Oh, women who've been washed up here from all over. Chinese, Malay, Tamil, not all slitty-eyed either. European women, Russians, some of them, all sorts. War does that. A lot of young Chinese girls arriving now, escaping the Japs. Much better.
Not better, Monty, not better.
Just younger, that's all. No need to get worked up, old boy. It's not my fault.
But it's all our fault. We make vast sums of money from them and we can't even...
Oh, all that morality. It's no good here, Matthew. No earthly good out here. This is more our line. Here, old boy.
Ah, very kind, lovely gentleman. You sit down, please. Have beer, cold beer, and regard the wonders of the East.
Wonders of the East, Monty. I don't really want to see a shirt.
Just how much have you drunk tonight?
Nothing. Very little.
Well, drink this. And for God's sake, buck up, will you? Or this is going to be no fun at all.
A plain, rather pallid Chinese girl with pigtails slips off her robe and sits naked on a rickety chair for the inspection.
You like her?
Can't you see, Monty? This is all
Well, it's
just...
not the bloody League of Nations, I'll tell you that.
Please.
Well, just give him a dollar for the beer and a couple for the girls, otherwise we'll be here all night. Come on.
Say, Monty, did you see in the visitor's book? The Archbishop of Canterbury and Sir Brooke Popham have both been here tonight.
People don't sign their real names in places like this, you idiot.
Oh, my Lord, Monty. I really don't feel very well. I'm afraid...
Well, we'd better get out of here, hadn't we?
Get some rest, Matthew. Oh, and do think about my proposition. It's a real bargain. Right.
So there he sits, or slumps, in a wicker chair on the veranda of his bungalow. Exhausted, his brain in a whirl. Karl Marx, a naked Chinese girl doing her homework. A fat lady in a cannon. Miss Vera Chang, and Joan, and Monty, and the pain on Jim Arendorf's face, and the faces of the women peering through the car headlamps like huge white moths. And he really should go to sleep, but the night is not over yet, for Matthew, or for Singapore.
Monty, I thought you'd gone.
It's not Monty. We saw the light from the road, and as Jim was on his way home, we thought we'd drop in to say goodnight.
Oh, sorry, I was...
And Jim wanted to have a word with you.
Ah, well, if it was about the economic question, surely we must allow the whole country to develop.
No, not about that. Go on, Jim. You said you would.
Looking at his friend and Joan Blackett standing together, Matthew thinks...
What luck they've made it up after the argument they had earlier.
Or at least, that is more or less the dramatic reflection of something that arises from the whirl of thoughts and feelings in his head.
Go on.
He also notices, as Arendorf steps forward out of the shadows, that his friend appears to be soaking wet, from head to toe.
I just wanted to say, Matthew, that I expect I'll be leaving Singapore in a day or two. Another posting, I guess you'd call it. Not sure where to, but...
Go on.
And I realize after this evening that, Joan and I, well, just good friends, no future in our relationship. Wish each other well, naturally, but,
There.
You're leaving? I've only just arrived, and... I don't know, it's also... I must have eaten something.
Matthew, I have to go. Good night.
But...
Well, we shall certainly miss you. And don't worry, I'll get a taxi home. Bye! Come for a walk outside. It's lovely. Moon's rising, or perhaps it's the starlight. Ooh. You can see almost as clear as day. And it's getting cool at last. Come on, stop daydreaming. You'll be telling me you want a serious talk next. Well, I've had enough serious talks for one night. Come on, I want to show you something.
It's awfully dark out here, Jan.
It is rather, isn't it?
Do you think it might be dangerous? Are they wild animals?
Matthew, would you like to kiss me? You can, you know. It's all right. I know how you feel.
I'm not...
Oh,
don't
be a silly.
Joan, where are you?
In the trees with the wild animals. Matthew, do you love me?
Please. Where are you?
Over here. This way. Come on, this way.
I'm not feeling very...
Do you love me?
Yes. I mean, where are you?
Over here, by the swimming pool. How much do you love me?
Well, I...
Enough to jump in the pool with all your clothes on. Go on.
Joan...
That's what I want you to do.
I wouldn't dream of it. I'm not well. I think I should go to bed.
Wait. I think I'm falling. Oh. I think you'll have to save me, Matthew. It's lovely. Lovely. So cool. Come on. For me.
I have to get some sleep. Tomorrow.
Wait for me. Wait, I said. I'm coming too.
What an odd girl she is. Good Lord.
As he climbs the rickety steps to the veranda, Matthew sees a young woman coming forward to greet him. For a moment, he wonders how on earth Joan could have got out of the pool and made it back ahead of him. Then...
You are most surprised to see me here, Matthew. You remember, yes? Vera Chang?
And at the very sight of Miss Vera Chang, the palm of one of his hands begins to tingle deliciously.
You see, I still have in this house the bedroom which your dear father gave to me when I was on my uppers. Such a good, kind man, Matthew. You can be pretty sure I'll always say one for him for the help he gave me. And so I still have many things here. My gramophone and my books, because I always like to have my nose in a book. And my many snaps of myself and your dear father. He was so very keen on the gymnastics, you see. The tip-top condition.
I saw the parallel bars and things in the garden.
Snaps of my family, too, in Shanghai. Now, sadly, all have kicked the bucket. But today when I saw you, I thought, Matthew will like to see my snaps and... Are you all right, dear? You seem rather hot about the collar, I must say.
As a matter of fact, I'm not feeling very well. I seem to be having an attack of the Singapore grip, or whatever it's called.
Miss Chang goes a little pink with surprise at this, and Matthew thinks...
She looks prettier than ever. If only all of this were real, and I could...
Matthew!
Oh, Joan. Do you know Miss Chang? I think she said she was going to show me some photographs.
Gracious, Miss Blackett, your dress is all wet. Let me get your towel.
No, thank you, Vera. I shall have dried out in no time. Besides, I find it pleasantly cool. How do you find your dress?
I find it...
Miss Chang was a refugee, you know, Matthew, and your father gave her... a job. And fortunately, she happened to be the same size as I am, so I was able to pass on some of my old frocks.
So kind of Miss Blackett. Of course, before the Japanese invasion, my family had clothes to spare.
Well, we always give our old clothes away. The Ama or the boy uses them as dusters or rags, but since Miss Chang was the right size...
Not quite, I fear, Miss Blackett. I sometimes think this dress is a little tight across the chest. What do you think, Matthew? If I were a little more flat-chested, would it not be an even more perfect fit? But then, even as a young girl, my breasts were rather well-developed. I find... Sometimes I breathe easier when I open these two top buttons. That's better.
Funny thing, but my mother says the servants to whom she donates her old clothes are often not in the least grateful. Would you believe it, Matthew? Do you think it's because they aren't of pure European stock, or is it simply a lack of education and good breeding? There we are. There's nothing more disagreeable than a wet bra.
Look, I really must go to bed now. I'm not at all well.
But, Matthew, you must come and look at the snaps I have in my room.
First, Matthew is coming to see something I want to show him outside in the compound. And it may take a little time, Vera. I think it would be best if you didn't bother to wait up.
In that case, it is better that I take him first to my room.
I must say, it's no joke being attractive to women.
Matthew, old chap. Now, that's it. Open your eyes.
Where? What?
A fever. It happens. We'll get you to bed. You'll be all right in no time. Just a fever, that's all. Miss Blackett's gone for the MO, and Miss Chang is getting some ice from the freezer. You'll be all right. Now, I just get you to bed. And let you sleep. let you sleep.
And so time passes. Matthew finds himself in bed. The Misses Blackett and Chang have departed. Brooke Popham, C&C Singapore, lies awake thinking of France, 1917. The Major sits on the veranda smoking a cigar, recalling Dublin, 1916. Soldiers of the Japanese Imperial Army wait in a landing craft somewhere in the South China Sea, hoping that their courage will not fail and that they will not dishonour their families. And Singapore, that mighty emporium, lies dreaming dreams that all too soon will end.
The Singapore Grip by J.G. Farrell, adapted for radio by Mike Walker. J.G. Farrell was played by Robert Glenister, Matthew Webb by Jonathan Cake, Joan Blackett by Samantha Spiro, and Jim Ehrendorf by Kenny Blythe. Monty Blackett was played by David Thorpe, Major Archer, John Rowe, Walter Blackett, Timothy Bateson, Vera Chang by Su Lin Lui, and Air Marshal Brooke Popham by Terence Edmund. Gamelan music was composed and performed by Felix Jay. Trumpet solos were by Byron Wallen. The Singapore Grip was directed by Peter Kavanagh.